CJLO 1690 AM.
For CJLO News, this is Ahmed Mujtahid. The city of Montreal is set to rename the street which carries the name of Geoffrey Amherst, a former English military commander whose desire was to exterminate the race of indigenous people by giving them blankets infected with smallpox. Amherst Street, the street that runs from the city's old port to La Fontaine Park, will be renamed in honor of an indigenous person. A committee composed of indigenous people has been considering several indigenous figures to name the street after. The committee will reveal their selection on June 21st, which is National Indigenous Peoples Day. According to CTV News, several names have been already suggested, including Huron Chief Kondjaronk, a key figure in the 1701 treaty called the Great Peace of Montreal.
Very emotional for me to be here today, as I remember and I try to select a few fond memories of my years here at Western. Could have been my earliest memory of driving in off the 401 with a sign that said, "Thank you, fathers, for dropping off your virgin daughters."
This was music composer and pianist Stefan Macchio addressing graduating students and their families at Western University's 313th convocation in London, Ontario. His speech sparked controversy as many people thought it was offensive and demeaning towards women. Macchio not only referenced his arrival in London in the early 90s that caught some off guard, but he also recited a song largely seen as degrading to the women of Delaware Hall, an all-female residence. Western University has apologized for what it called unacceptable and inappropriate remarks made at a convocation ceremony. Macchio also released a statement posted on the university's website, apologizing for his comments that he called inappropriate. In international news, four people were charged with causing the crash of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17, the passenger flight which was shut down over eastern Ukraine in 2014 as it was en route from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur. According to investigators, three Russians and a Ukrainian have been charged with bringing a missile into the plane, murdering 298 passengers and crew. International arrest warrants have been issued for the four suspects, and a court case will begin in the Netherlands in March 2020. To hear the newscast and learn more about the news team, visit cjlo.com.
Tumble out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets, the traffic starts jumping with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5. What a way to make a living. Barely getting by. It's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind and they never give you credit. It's enough to drive you crazy if you let it. 9 to 5.
Hello, everybody. The gorgeous divas, this is Erdine, the Golden Dragon, on Sparkling Introspection on CJLO 1690 AM. Thank you for joining us on this fine night. And this is a show where we talk about anything that is concerning, confusing, and intriguing women. And also whatever I want, because this is my show. Yes, so remember last week what I said about the rain, that it's always raining on Thursdays? I mean, it's raining again today. But today there's a reason why it was raining all day long. And I will tell you, I'm not a weather reporter, but I know why it was raining. I say this with heavy heart, but tonight is my last show on CJLO. That's because I'm leaving Montreal, so I cannot continue to do the show. I mean, if I could do it from across the country, it would be amazing because I love doing this show. So before we like get into today's topic, because it's hot, I just want to like have a little heart to heart, you know, just express how grateful I am for everything. So This show basically has been such an amazing opportunity for me to just get out all the stories that I had pent up in me and that I want to talk about. And it's also been an amazing experience to get to know my friends and really get their stories out there, you know, because that was the most important thing for me, because I, like I always say, I'm surrounded by such amazing, amazing, amazing women. So yeah, that was the main purpose of starting Sparkling Introspection. And I think in the short time that I kind of accomplished that, I would like to continue though. But there are so many stories that are worth telling that doesn't get the time of the day in like mainstream media or elsewhere. So I was glad to, you know, have this platform to talk about it. And I know it has been such a short time, so I haven't stolen your hearts just yet, although I tried hard. But I will carry on the Sparkling Introspection torch far into time and life. It may be a different platform, but I will be back. Insert Arnold Schwarzenegger meme, you know, I'll be back. Okay, anyways, you can look it up on the internet. But here's a little story about why I started Sparkling Introspection. I'm feeling a little ranty or like rambly today because I'm kind of feeling sad and also in denial and also like super nervous. So I want to do Sparkling Introspection because when I was in journalism school, I always felt like I didn't fit in. Like I didn't fit into the CBC mold, and I didn't want to. Like they wanted like serious journalists who like inverted pyramid, just like blah blah blah. And I've never been like a serious person, so I was just like ew. But like coming into journalism school for a long time, I felt like I was such a bad journalist, and it was because like I wouldn't get like an internship at CBC or like the Gazette, or you know, I arrived like 1 minute late to class. I hate Julia Gervais. I called him out. I graduated, so whatever. But yeah, like in journalism school for like the longest time, I was quite miserable just because I, you know, when everyone around you is the same and you're not the same, like you just end up feeling some type of way. And I was definitely feeling some type of way. And my talents weren't being used. And there were some things that I was good at and I was willing to improve. And I was improving, but like it still wasn't what they wanted. And I also wasn't doing things that I wanted to do. I want to tell like community-based stories. I want to tell important stories. I want to cover like social justice kind of stuff. I want to talk about women, you know, and it doesn't like... I know there's no space in like CBC or like the daily newspapers or whatever. So, you know, it was a little disheartening, but you know, whatever. I could do like all those little pieces, work under the deadline, go out and like shoot and edit. But like, who was I doing it for? You know, those stories, like that kind of grind didn't incite excitement within me, you know? It's just like story a day, 3 stories a day, and then like goodbye, forget about it, you know? Anyways, so I want to work for myself because that's something that I like very clearly envisioned for myself. That if there was no space for me out there, what I could do was find that space and create that space for myself. So that's why I want to do Sparkling Introspection, you know? And it's fun. It's sometimes we cover serious topics and sometimes we don't. And there's no one breathing down my neck telling me what to do. I'm the one breathing down my neck. And because I love what I'm doing and because I love the stories that I cover and I talk about and because I love the guests who come in, I feel like I can blossom as a journalist. And this is the type of journalist that I am. And there's so many different types of journalists. And I think I finally found like what I want to tell. Like, by no means, I'm not like a monotoned anchor like, welcome, this is CBC. I don't think that's how they do. But anyways, I'm being super shady. But yeah, like, regardless whether I'm serious or not, these are still important stories that need to be told. And like, get, you know, dig a little deeper and, you know, just like put that angle of the woman, you know, and woman of color, you know. So, yeah, I just like I want to thank everyone who has ever listened, even if it was just like for a hot minute or you've listened to every episode. And like my friend Nicole, she always listens and then she texts me while I'm on the show and like we have really good discussions afterwards. And it means the world that at least I don't care if there's only one person listening. It's just such an amazing, amazing feeling. So yeah, I'm so, so, so grateful. Thank you everyone for listening. But don't think this is the over for the Sparkling Introspection journey, because I'll be back. Okay, so keep a lookout. Yeah, so again, thank you. Also, I'm like forever in awe of the women who are in my life, and they are truly getting shit done. Like the fattest brain, the wrinkliest brains out there, and like such beauties, kindest, passionate soul, you know? So today's topic, well, I guess topic, and we have a special guest, and since it's my last show, I truly want to go out with a bang, and I want to bring on someone who I've recently met and I grew such a respect for. And I mean, she is just so wonderful. And yeah, I'm super excited to have her. Thank you so much for agreeing. We're going to be talking about like activism, solidarity, and like how to get rid of racist white people, etc., etc. Let's take a quick song break and then a quick ad break though. And then we'll come back and do a quick little interview with the secret guest. So I would like to play Bad Girls by Donna Summers, because this song gets me hype, okay? New beginnings, but same old attitude of fire and love, okay? So don't go anywhere. Bad Girls by Donna Summers. You are listening to Sparkling Introspection on CJLO 1690 AM. What am I saying? So don't go anywhere. Here is Bad Girls.
Hey. Hello Montreal, this is Sherva Wells. Looking forward to being your MC in Montreal on Saturday, July the 13th at the Spice Island Cultural Day in Vinette Park, Little Burgundy. Coming along with me and Grenada's Prime Minister, a Calypsonian Shortry and Boise, who plan to mash up the place. Come and enjoy spicy food, arts and crafts, entertainment galore, and some real Grenadian culture. Visit SpiceIslandCultureDay.com. It's a taste of the spice coming your way. See you there.
Attention rockers, psychedelic knots, punk freaks, and guitar geeks. This is a public service announcement from Zachary Slacks to notify you that Slacks Tracks is now at a new time, Mondays at 6 p.m. Allow me to roll the many-sided die of your mind with rock that gets weird and wild. Slacks Tracks, Mondays, 6 p.m. on
CJLO.
Come on!
Hello and welcome back to Sparkling Introspection on CJLO 1690 AM. Yeah, so like I mentioned before we went on break, this is the last show of Sparkling Introspection, and I'm so sad and quite nervous about it. And I also mentioned we have a very special guest today, and Masuma, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Hi.
Yay! I'm so happy!
Woo!
Hi. We just had like such phone problems just during the break, and I was literally sweating because this old ass phone was not working, and I was like, I cannot do this. My guest of honor, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you? I'm a little under the weather, so I have a little bit of a nasally sound, but other than that, I'm pretty solid. How are you feeling?
You sound wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
You make nasal sound good, okay?
Oh my God.
Anyways, thank you so much for actually coming on, even though you're like working and being sick and, you know, all this stuff happening.
Anything for you.
Oh my God, I'm blushing. So before we get into like you introducing yourself, I just want to tell people about Masuma, okay? I met Masuma last, like 2 weekends ago in Ottawa, and I guess we kind of like work together, and I swear to God, as soon as I met Masuma, I was like, who is this bad bee? There was just like such an air around you. I was shook, because I usually like fall in love and get infatuated with people, but there are so few people who I like, who command my respect. You know?
Oh, that's so sweet. Oh my God, I don't deserve that.
Yes, you do. You deserve everything in this damn world.
Oh,
take it. Be greedy. So, that was a lot. Also, Masuma and I are both Pisces, so you know, that big sensitive energy coming to yo. You know?
100%.
Yeah, hundo. Okay, so, before we get into it, who are you? Please introduce yourself.
Okay, hi everyone, my name is Masuma Khan. I'm now a Dalhousie alumni. I just graduated with my Bachelor's of Education and double major in International Development Studies and History. But I was born and raised and live on unceded Unceded Mi'kmaq territory, and I consider myself to be a person who does work in the community, for the community, with the community. So whatever that might look like, if it looks like conversations or actions around Indigenous sovereignty, more specifically Mi'kmaq sovereignty, or if it looks like challenging anti-racism, doing anti-pipeline work, challenging sexualized violence, and what have you. Basically, I think my work and who I am as a person is just, I'm someone who likes to, and I think my existence relies on me challenging systems of oppression that exist around us. And so that's kind of who I am, and that's kind of the work that I do.
And I love the way you describe the work that you do. You work for the community.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that this falls into the realm of activism? And like maybe that's what you explained it, but what is activism to you if you
define I think it does fall into the realm of activism, but I'm always cautious with the way and in the language that we're using and the way that activism is coming up. It's becoming a really like buzzword where people are like, oh yes, I'm an activist. I feel like a lot of people are now joining movements for the wrong reason. They want a photo op. They want to be in a newspaper. I don't call myself an activist. I just do the work. I don't do the work to be recognized. I feel like when people are like, yes, I'm an activist, that's just how I feel. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to, you know, dupe anyone who calls themselves an activist out of being proud for the work that they do. Mm-hmm. I recognize that. But for me, I don't know, maybe it's like this humbleness. I never want to be like, I feel like an activist is someone that's not approachable. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. you can't touch them. I feel like someone who's doing community work or a community member that actually cares about what's happening is a title or a name that you can give someone that it's more approachable, where community members, no matter where they are in the spectrum of class, privilege, and marginality, they can relate to you, right?
Wow, what a humble queen. Is a humble queen! And I totally agree with you on the aspect of like activism becoming this buzzword, because, I mean, it's not a pretty work, I think. At the core of it, it's very hard. It's very draining. But I know that I have seen a lot of people who enjoy the photo op, you know? And that's, I don't think that's like the best thing. But jumping off that point, I know, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I've seen you on like Facebook and stuff. You're quite like visible. Lots of groups like feature your photos. And I saw you at demonstrations. So someone who is like, I guess, like in the public sphere, visibly, there are people who like get hype off that, you know, who get like, oh, I want to be famous, you know, all that kind of stuff. Do you get like bad feedback? Because I remember like you were sharing a story when we were together. Like, what are the sides of you doing this work and getting feedback or criticism or hate?
I think a lot of the work comes with hate. I think first it comes from the hate of the people we challenge. So, you know, from these neo-Nazis and these white supremacists, they're always going to spew hate, right? Mm. So that's like one level of hate. That's kind of the level of hate you expect. And then there's always that lateral hate too, right? Mm-hmm. Where people who don't know you, who are part of your community, say things about you because they're a little jealous that they're not in the spotlight. And let me tell you something about that. That, you know, through the work that I've done, I've gotten a lot of hate. I've, you know, trended on Twitter. I've, you know, done those weird things and made international news and been on every newspaper across Turtle Island. But for me, when I did the work that I did, challenging Canada 150 and what was happening at the Western Union at the time, I didn't do that for fame. I did that because I believe that my duty as someone who is displaced and is living on Mi'kmaq territory, it was my duty as a treaty person to bring that conversation to the table. And it turned around and ended up with a lot of backlash, and my university tried to discipline me, and there was a lot of attention that generated it. But I did get folks, you know, going around saying, oh, Masuma just did that for fame. No. Like, no one in their right mind would do something like that for fame when you deal with all the doxing. I'm still harassed every day over this stuff, eh? Like, I've had so many death threats. I've had people message me telling me how to mutilate my body. The amount of trauma that I've accumulated from the work that I want to do and I do for the community, for all of us, including myself, is out of my heart and my soul, and my love for the work and my hope for the future. It is not for clout. I don't do anything for clout. Not to quote Offset or Cardi, but like, you know, that's not my scene. For me, I think I'm happy to be in the background or wherever people need me. If you ever see me in the front, that's because I've been told to be in the front. I don't move until I've been told to move by the community. Or like, say, you know, when we were stopping the bridge and we did a whole, like, we stopped our entire bridge from Dartmouth to Halifax for an Indigenous sovereignty march in Mi'kmaq territory. And I was at the front. That's not because I wanted to be at the front. That's because my Mi'kmaq sisters wanted me to be at the front with them. I didn't move there. They told me to move there, right? Mm. So that's different than wanting to be at the front every time, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, I know my place, and I like being where I am. And for me, I think what's really great is the fact that I have these amazing relationships with community members, even though our oppression is different, though similar, and they intersect with one another. It's allowed me to, like, create relationships of such resilient solidarity that have formed into chosen, like, family as well, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's a great feeling. But it's also intense when you deal with a lot of backlash and harassing. Like, I get followed around. My tires get slashed every so often. Oh, you know, people dox me, so they videotape me. They'll make fake videos up about me and put it on YouTube. Ontario Proud will, you know, do something. I'm not even in Ontario, but they like to post about me. So there's lots of stuff like that. You know, it comes with its cons and its pros, but I think at the end of the day, you know, what was it we learned? I came for the work, but I stayed for the community.
Yeah.
You know, so that's where I'm at in my life.
So today, just on TBH, I was stalking you on Facebook, lurking you on Facebook, and I saw the Ontario Proud comments. And, like, they put your name and then just, like, these uneducated, terrible, ignorant white men commenting just terrible things about you.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the things that they mentioned was they pinpointed the fact that you're a Muslim woman.
Yeah.
You should be grateful for being in Canada. You should be this. And how do you think, I know there are a lot of amazing activists who are, you know, not a person of color, they're white. Do you think your experience is different, and how so, being a Muslim woman versus a white activist?
Of course my experience is different. When people look at me, they don't even expect me to be able to speak English. Mm. They expect, as soon as they see me, they see what Orientalism and the media has portrayed me as, an oppressed woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when people are interacting with me, it's like they have this savior complex. They want to save me from myself, even though I believe that my hijab is my liberation and my faith is a part of me. And in comparison, these white activists, they don't really deal with that. You know, they may be queer, they may be trans, they may have a disability, they may be femme, they may deal with patriarchy, they may deal with all these things in different ways, but racialization is a totally different experience. And it's not something I can say, hey, you know what this feels like. They'll never, ever know, because they are part of, they often, I find, co-opt the system by criticizing the system, yet upholding the system that benefits them. So they want to be in the front of the spaces. They want to be taking over. When it comes to a thing on Islamophobia, they want to run the event. When it comes to something on, you know, anti-racism or something like that, they're going to tell us how they feel about being white and how white people can be less racist, you know? But the truth is, they don't
often, of course, there's going to be folks who are solid and do listen, but I find there's a lot of people that are often wrapped up in this. I want to be this, like, good white person because I have so much guilt about my ancestors and what society looks like because of me, so I'm just going to take this point right here, and I'm going to speak for everyone, and I'm going to take up as much space as I can. And so for me, it's just like, it's totally different. When they do something like I do, they don't get the backlash I do. They don't get the doxing I do. They don't get the death threats I do. You know what I mean? It's totally different than, you know, if they said white fragility can kiss my ass, you know, in a hashtag, they wouldn't have been disciplined for it. I was disciplined for it, you know?
And it's very interesting. Today I saw a post on Facebook in one of the groups that I follow, and this lady had posted something about stealing posters from anti-abortion like protesters. You know, they stand and just are stupid. And she had posted, oh, guess what I did today? Just steal it and then walk around with the poster and they'll follow you and call the police. And she was, like, from the picture, she was visibly white. I'm not sure about her intersecting identities, but I was just thinking to myself, if it was a racialized person who did that, I feel like the experience, the outcome would have been very, very different.
Of course, a lot of them don't recognize their privilege in situations at all, right? They're so ignorant to it, they don't understand the way it plays in. I had to explain to someone at my workplace that when they start talking to me, when I go in to do a presentation, the whole room assumes I can't speak English. So I had to cut off my coworker who was speaking for me and introducing myself for me and say, and I felt like I had to, like, justify myself and why I was there. I gave this other white woman a spiel. She was speaking for me in front of this other white woman. I was like, yes, my name's Masuma Khan. I was the VPA here at the Dalhousie for 2 years. I just graduated from Dal. Like, I had to, like, I felt like I had to list my credentials to be like, actually, I'm supposed to be in this space and I'm qualified. And I feel like a lot of people don't understand how, when their privilege comes into play, they kind of demoralize and demean our experiences and delegitimize our knowledge.
That's very wonderfully said. Yeah. There's, like, even not even in the world of, like, activism or, like, community organizing, as a woman and as a woman of color, I always feel the need to, like, just list everything, you know?
Yeah.
Because I have this, like,
I volunteered for this thing one time, and I did this, and, oh, I can do this. And...
yes. Because it's this, like, sewn-in imposter syndrome that I face everywhere I go.
For sure.
And it's just so unfortunate. Speaking of, like, all this... like, honestly, when I was reading, not to... let's go back to the Ontario Proud thing. When I was seeing that, I was shook. And it wasn't directed at me, but I felt bad. I felt it to my core, and I had to have a moment. I had to, like, step away and, like, watch Queer Eye and, like, bring myself back, you know? And so you going through this experience of, like, constant hate and, like, people slashing your tires and stuff, does it affect your self-identity? Like, does it strengthen it or does it weaken it?
Oh, it ebbs and flows. I find I'm human, you know? So there was a point where I think it almost broke me because my mind was so filled with it. And then I'd feel somewhat like I was kind of whatever normal means. But then it would come back and I would be like, what am I doing in this? Like, why am I doing this to myself? Like, I'm being so hurt. People are coming for me. I worry about my safety, my family's safety, you know, my future, my friends. Like, you know, if anyone that I loved was ever targeted because of me, it would kill me. And I've already been targeted a few times, so I can't even imagine. And these kind of safety questions. Often I find I'm more paranoid than I ever was in my life, for sure. Mm. You know, I'm constantly, I don't walk with two headphones in. I'm constantly aware of my surroundings. I'm constantly listening to footsteps behind me. I think I feel like I always have to be aware. And so it just, it's made me kind of need to also take time to relax and let go. But I think it has made me a stronger person because I had to recognize something. And it was a hard thing to recognize. But I think it's when I really realized that there's a lot of people that were commenting, like hundreds of thousands of people that were commenting terrible things about me. And I realized that all this hate, you know, there is people that also didn't want me alive. Mm. And I had a conversation with myself that kind of went like this. Like, Masima, you know, there's people that don't want you to live. Mm. And I had to sit with that. And then I thought, you know what? Like, is it worth living a life if I don't get to speak and do work that fights for our collective justice? Like, is it worth it? Like, I would rather die than not do the right thing. My life would be worthless if I didn't use it doing the things that we need, supporting the people that need support, and being there when community calls. You know, so for me, I think the most liberating part is I'm not scared to die from this work. They can't kill me even if they do that, you know. This work lives on. It doesn't only live in me, it lives in all of us. So for me, that was a really radical thought to have and a really liberating moment. Yeah.
Hmm. Aside from, like, sitting down and having this conversation with yourself.
Mm.
When you do this type of work and it's so tolling on your mind, body, and soul, how do you incorporate self-care?
I have a hard time with self-care just because I find it's tied to a lot of capitalism and elitism and some sorts of classism. However, I do agree that, like, you know, I take the time to paint my nails, you know, I will do a face mask, I will do my makeup in the morning, or I will take the time to set out my clothes, or take the time to clean up my room, or get my stuff in order, you know, but for me, what's more important is community care. I like surrounding myself with community members who are also depleted from their capacity, and we sit together and like spread whatever love we have left to one another and kind of refill our capacity. So for me, I think more in community care, like, because the other thing too is like we can make systems of sustainable work ethic in this work, and it looks like checking in and having good practice and, you know, taking that time for yourself, taking time for your community, and being able to share and speak truth and feel feelings. But that only happens when you're in a supportive sort of situation. Some of us aren't. I found when I was going through a lot of crap, bystander approach sort of filled in, where everyone was like, oh yeah, Masu is fine. Like, don't worry, she's got this. Someone must be checking in on her. No one was checking in on me, you know. I'm safe, and I survived that, and maybe surviving it kind of on my own made me bitter but also stronger at the same time. But there's a lot of us that like that don't have that, and I don't know if I'll be capable next time to survive it on my own. So I think it's important that community care and like checking in with folks and giving love to your friends who are going through hard stuff is really important.
Just know, I mean, I can only speak for myself, you have an army of people who is behind you and who will kill a bee if it comes down to it. Wow, I'm saying this on, like, radio. Anyways, I said it, whatever. I'll kill for you. That's cool. yes. So, during the training, one thing that really stood out and made me like respect you to my damn core was this, like you mentioned, community care, and I just felt such a deep love from you that you loved your community and you worked for your community, even though it's hard. And you talked about building solidarity. So I just want to like talk to you about like, what does solidarity actually look like, and how do we actively engage and build it?
Solidarity looks like, I think people often say solidarity looks like showing up, but I think I'd like to say solidarity looks like showing up when it's not about you. Solidarity looks like showing up when you're tired. Solidarity looks like showing up when you still have work to do. Solidarity looks like showing up when, you know, even if you're at low capacity, you still support the cause in some way. So if we're talking about, you know, you're having a heart pain day and you're dealing with a chronic pain, maybe you share the event and you blast it on Twitter. And that's the sort of solidarity you do. But for me, I think the solidarity work really stems from, in my language, I find the words like, something that's always really stood out to me is like, I think to reconcile, the root of the word means love in my language. And for me, like, you can't reconcile with someone you don't love. So you can't have solidarity with someone you don't love as well, right? So if we're going to have solidarity with someone or communities or all of our communities together and how they intersect in all these beautiful ways, then that means that we really need to ground it in this really beautiful, radical love, which means, you know, when you're maybe not making the best choices and I can see you doing harm, that looks like me not shaming you or disposing of you, but also calling you in and saying, like, maybe you didn't have these tools, but I'm going to show you them. But, you know, we're going to take that time to learn together. That means I learn from you. That means you learn from me. That means we give and take and give and take. That means we have accountability between us. That means when you're stuck in a hard place, you know you can count on me. And I think if I leave this world in a place where my community members remember me as someone who always came through when I had capacity, I'd be happy to go out that way. And so for me, solidarity is really built on this radical love, because I'm a Pisces double Scorpio. I love really hard. I love really truthfully and wholeheartedly. So for me, emotions and sincerity are really important, because if you're not being intentional about why you're doing the work, you don't know why you're there. Why exactly are you there? For me, I have that intention. When we're doing protests, when we're at a rally, I'm there to support the work. I'm there to support the cause, the people, the community, the issue at hand, and I'm there to be part of the solution. So for me, I'm not just there at the beginning, and I'm not just there at the end. I'm there through the whole thing. And that's what solidarity looks like, to me at least.
That's really wonderfully said. And from what you just said, I think there are a few things that I could also learn and reflect on myself. So thank you for that.
Oh my.
Just one more thing. Do you have any advice for people wanting to get into like community work, organizing within their communities? Because like I... like earlier on in the interview, you said like when you see like activists, it seems like you can't touch them. And when I was starting out doing this, I was really like, I did everything by myself. Right. And because I felt like I didn't have the tools, I didn't know facilitation, I didn't know like all these things. So do you like, what tools are available for people who actually want to take action?
I think the tool is to connect with your community. I think if you create open communication with the community or the communities or the issues you want to work on, you'll be able to find your place and how you can be part of the solution and part of taking action. I feel like we tend to make things more complicated than they are and try like create barriers to this work when there should never be any. This work can take many different roles and different capacities. And I guess my advice is you're going to be learning so much, so much. And if you ask me something I did 5 years ago compared to what I did today, I could tell you, I made so many mistakes 5 years ago. You're going to learn. You're going to have to be receptive to that, too. So my greatest advice to people who are wanting to engage in this work is when, because I know you will, when you make a mistake, do not meet your accountability with guilt. Meet it with open mind and soul and hear the criticism and do better for yourself, because all that's going to do is make you a better person, a better person for your community, a better person for your workplace, a better person in this world as a whole, just a better person. So to be able to take that criticism and challenge yourself on the harm that you probably will manifest in some way along this work is a really great tool to have, and I think is a really key tool to have to be able to do this work consistently. That's my, I think, don't let anyone tell you can't do it. If you're passionate about it and you love your community, get going. And when you make those mistakes, don't be ashamed. Don't be guilty. Hear the person out. Hear what you've done wrong. Think about it. Unlearn and continue unlearning. Remember, it's a verb. It goes on forever. There's always more to learn. There's always more ways to do better.
Yeah. Learn and keep on learning.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, looking back, your journey, your school, your work, do you have any personal lessons that you've learned? Whether it be taking care of yourself, taking care of your community, or doing this work in a different way?
Personal lessons. I've learned to, as far as it sounds, trust less. I think I think a lot of us trust easy. And for me, I think I used to think, oh my God, if this person, has similar oppression to me, then they're going to understand where I'm coming from and it's going to be mutual. But, there's some folks that have been so colonized that they can't see through anything else but a colonial lens. So it's really important, to recognize that and to acknowledge if you have the space to do that teaching, or if you have the space to let that friendship or, I had someone trick me into friendship. I thought they were my friend, and then they ended up doxing me and stuff. So I have terrible trust issues when it comes to stuff like that. So I think one of the good lessons I learned was, before you consider someone your friend, really get to know them on different levels. And really listen to what other people say about them too, especially your community members and what kind of vibes they get from them. Also pay attention to horoscopes. But I think the greatest lesson of all I've learned is I felt like a lot of people expecting me to fall on my face, not be able to graduate, lose my mind, and sort of be the crazy hijabi at Dell. But something I learned is we are so much more resilient than we are taught to think of ourselves as. Our bodies hold so much harm, and they hold so much persistence. Like, I did not know that I could survive all these things, but I have been surviving, and I will continue to survive. And I think that it's exhausting, but it's worth it. And some days are going to be harder, and some days are going to be great. Of course, when we have wins, it's freaking amazing. Mm. But I think overall, what I've learned is just that sometimes it feels like every day is the same day on repeat, but you still do everything you can to make that a better day somehow, some way. And so for me, it's just about when I lay my head on the pillow at night, can I go to sleep knowing that I tried to make this world a better place and to make space for my community?
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you. We are out of time, but again, I want to thank you so much for doing this, taking the time. I know in Halifax it's super late and you're not feeling the best. But again, like, now the world knows who the hell Masuma is, and she is not a bee to give up without a fight. And you are just, like, I wish everyone could meet Masuma, because you are just a radiant powerhouse, okay? And you are so wonderful. Don't listen to the haters. I will slap them one by one. Well, when I visit your city, yeah, but I don't think that'll happen because I don't have money. But anyways, thank you so much. So I will talk to you on the interweb sphere.
Okay, thanks for having me on your show.
Yay, thank you. Good night.
Bye.
Bye. Wow, y'all. Was that amazing or what? That was Masuma Khan, who is my friend. She's an amazing person. She does so much important work. And I'm so, so thankful that she came on the show and shared her experience. I feel like every time I talk to her, I'm learning something new. And I love learning stuff from people. We have a quick break right now. And then afterwards, we'll wrap up, and then I'll cry a little, you'll cry a little, we'll fall in love, etc., etc. So don't go anywhere. You are listening to Sparkling Introspection on CGLO 1690 AM.
Suoni Pearl Popolo and Super Connected presents Lido Pimienta at La Sala Rosa on June 22nd. The 2017 Polaris Prize winner is back in Montreal after a whirlwind year of touring, recording, and exploring new creative endeavors. Advance tickets are $20 and $25 at the door. For more information and festival details, visit suoniparopopolo.org. This is a Suoni and CJLO co-presentation.
Maritimes to the Pacific Coast. Meet the bands that shape our great nation's musical landscape. In English et en français. Tune in with The Corner's Crow every Sunday at 10 a.m. only on CJLO 1690 AM, Montreal.
Welcome back to Sparkling Introspection on CJLO 1690 AM. I am your host, Erdine Batorik, the Golden Dragon, the Gorgeous Superstar Diva, the Sparkling Queen of the whole entire world. A universe. Who am I? I'm not a humble queen like Masuma. I'm not humble at all. I am the reigning queen champion of all things, all sparkling things of life. Okay, anyways. Sorry about that. So, before the break, we had a chance to speak with my friend Masuma, and I'm sure, like me, y'all are in awe too. I am in awe as well. And so many of the things that she was talking about and like we were discussing were so, so important. So I hope the next time that, you know, you feel something is not right in your world, that you don't like something, I hope you'll take the time to actually see what can you do. Because there's a lot of things that us individually we can do. I know society makes it feel like as a person you are powerless, and especially as a woman of color, if you're a woman of color, and if you belong to other marginalized groups, it can feel like society is constantly suppressing your shine. But don't let that happen, okay? You shine bright, okay? You are the diamond in the rough. Even if you're not a diamond, you're still sparkling. You know, you're a cute little seashell, okay? So don't ever think that you can't take action on your own. You can't do something. And don't think so much about labeling. Don't think about fitting into something, fitting into a mold. Just do it. And you may not see the effects of your actions. Also, don't do it to see effects of your actions, you know? Do it for the long term. Think about, like, how your action, how your commitment can affect people around you, how it can make people's life better. And recently, I've been reflecting a lot on the word friend and what friend means. And sometimes being a friend is really, really hard, you know, because it's not all fun. It's not all about getting cocktails or like sitting in the park and laughing and listening to, I don't know, like Tokyo Hotel. I don't know if people listen to Tokyo Hotel anymore, but like, you know, Radiohead or whatever. It's about actually putting in the work. It's about having someone's back when someone is going through it, you know. It's about being there for that person. And being there doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, like sending them like love letters every day or like buying them food all the time or like being with them all the time. It can just be as simple as just sending them a text being like, hey, how are you doing? Is there anything I can do for you? But before you do that, also check your capacity. What can you offer? Don't ask someone, hey, what can I do for you, if you aren't in that position to be able to provide something to them, you know? And there's no shame in that. You have to love yourself, take care of yourself. Listen, y'all, self-care is important. And self-care is not about taking bubble baths or, you know, doing all this stuff. Self-care is listening to yourself and putting your needs to the front. Don't shove them down, y'all, okay? Well, I know we all want that money. We all want that education. But your mind, your body, and your soul is so important, and it can have such wide effect on everyone, everything around you. So if you have been listening to the Sparkling Introspection since day one, if you have been listening just like here and there, a minute or two, I hope the one thing that you take away from this is that you are a gorgeous diva, okay? You are a gorgeous superstar diva. And don't let nobody else tell you you're not, because you define.